You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Top 25 Under 25. I have brought in a special guest, a former colleague, Sam McGilligan from Puck Preps Nowadays. Thank you for joining me, Sam.
Thank you for having me.
And last year it came out on the pod, I think, that you are a Habs fan.
I am a Habs fan. Absolutely through and through, 100% Montreal, been my team forever.
Yeah, and your job at McKean's was OHL, so obviously we're going to talk about Philip Machar here as well.
I also watched Machar a lot in Europe in his draft year, so like I've seen the transition from his draft year to the OHL, like what's happened.
And are you surprised with first and foremost that he went as early as he did?
I was shocked that he was a first round player. I believed he was a first round player because I was doing a lot of crossover work. So I got to see all the regions and like stack these players up. And I thought without question, Machar is a first round player, mostly because of his tools, but also just this intelligence to him and this ability to manage space and avoid pressure. He, in a lot of ways, felt like a miniaturized version or like a less effective version of Brad Lambert, who I just absolutely adored and thought was easily one of the best players in last year's draft altogether. And I was floored to see A, Machar go above Lambert, and B, Machar go in the first at all, and C, Machar go to Montreal, because it was one of those ones where I was sitting there, I was completely focused on one player at that pick. 26, I wanted Lambert. We didn't get him. But when we got Machar, I was like, that's about as good a non-Lambert pick as we could have made. I was still a fan of it, even if I do kind of wish we just took Brad.
You're just saying that because he's Canadian, right?
that and also because he's incredible. But Machar didn't. I know fans are a little underwhelmed with that pick, but I really like Philip Machar. I still think he's... I mean, I rated Hudson slightly higher, and obviously Hudson's season was enough to be like, yeah, that's the second best guy we drafted that year. But Machar is still a really, really good player to take with that pick. There's reasonable picks that you could have made there, that ones of players who went, I'd say, 10, 15 spots after. I still think Machar should be rated as high end as some of the other ones. I actually still like him a little bit more than Owen Beck in terms of upside.
When we think about this season and what happened to Machar, we had the struggle of deciding, and I think that Montreal picked him in the first round in order to control his development as they could with being a first round pick. We know he spoke about wanting to play in AHL with Laval or going back to Europe, where I know negotiations were quite long gone with Rögle, who got out of the negotiations earlier, and Brynäs in SHL. It didn't come through. And I think that was very valuable for Machar, because obviously Brynäs was struggling a lot last year, and so was Rögle at the start of the season. Brynäs ended up being relegated, so that would have been a tough season to be part of. And obviously as a junior and a foreign junior, you might have had to face the bench a little bit more. So going to juniors, I think, was the right move. He got a few games with Laval? But anyway, he went to juniors. Do you think that was the right move to do?
Yeah, I do. The Machar was a type of player who he was always going to have a bit of an adjustment going from larger ice to smaller ice anyways. So I think getting it over and done with as fast as possible while keeping the level of competition high enough so that he can still be himself and express himself, and like he's not going to be struggling to learn the pace of play and the smaller ice all at the same time, was absolutely the right call. And like you, I was watching Machar games just before this, as we talked about, like leading into as we started this, and it's the details that make him who he is are still there. There's some unbelievably smart touches and plays in transition and in the defensive zone, and even in all around the offensive zone, that you're just like, that was close to really turning into something magnificent there. And you can see that he's still who he was as a player. Like the first round pick that they took is absolutely still there. It's not like we misread the player and now he's over and he's kind of being exposed. It's like, he's not being exposed. He's just learning.
And obviously he's learning the social side of it as well, because he has to live in a new country, learning to pay the bills, et cetera, et cetera.
You can never, ever downplay how much of an impact that is to come over at 18 years old into a whole new country in like the, as an NHL draft prospect, now knowing your team, there's a team base or a fan base of a team following you, paying attention to what you're doing. You've got feedback from your team. You've got feedback from the team you're playing with. You've got the transition socially, culturally, responsibilities are coming in. There's just so much going on that an 18-year-old, you know, not having a seamless transition makes a lot of sense. If a lot of us went over to Europe or any like Sweden, Slovakia, anywhere for a year to play or do anything, like whatever you do as a job.
Yeah,
whatever you do as a job, like it wouldn't be a seamless transition. There would be struggles, but we're not videotaped and stacked on elite prospects for people to look at, so nobody judges us.
Indeed, going to school in one as an 18-year-old in a foreign country would be, you know, difficult as well. Even if most of the courses would probably be available in English one way or another, or you could get books in it. So I completely get that. You mentioned part of his upside, but if I ask you to describe the upsides that he has and that he has developed this year, what would you say then?
Well, I'd still say that Massar is a guy who I don't see him as like a first line upside guy, because those are often, they're rare. Like you don't really find those late in the draft past the late first often, unless one or two guys are slipping. And Massar was never going to be that type of guy, but like a second line, like someone you throw in the top six to play with alongside your second line star center or your, you know, your first line guy you have playing on the second line, just like the complementary piece to a second line or like the primary driver of a third line is kind of what you would expect from him. And I don't think he's shown anything that says he's not on this path yet. The only thing that I found slightly concerning, but it was a trend that got better as the season went on, was him kind of being out of sync with the rotations a bit and missing chances to get puck touches. He was playing a bit more off puck than I was expecting him to, but I think it was more so just, again, it was like getting the timing and getting the routes under and knowing that you don't have as much space laterally to escape with. And there's a more of a north-south game here and just like making that adjustment, but he made the adjustment, or at least he showed improvement towards it as the year went on. And when the puck was on his stick and he was in space, Massar was just dangling people. Like he has the skill and the mobility to be a high-end OHL player. He could, I'm not betting on him to explode in production next year. He was never striked me as the type to put up the scoring numbers that you'd expect of a player who actually does carry his skill set, because he will often forego the riskier, more dangerous play for the safe but definitely effective play. Like he's the guy who makes scores have a much easier time while still being able to chip in whenever there's a scoring chance that makes sense for him to chip in, but he doesn't force stuff. He's just super smart. He's really smart.
And that has been his strength the whole time.
Yeah.
Everyone speaks about his hockey IQ and how he sees the ice and the game and processes.
It's the vision and how he sees the ice, and his sense of incoming pressure is like the biggest one of all. Like how well he can use incoming pressure to solve problems. There are a handful of plays from last year that I still vividly remember watching in his draft season where he would enter a zone or stop up or go on his outside edge to make it seem like he was about to explode by a guy. Instead, he'd slow to a crawl. Second wave of pressure would come in somewhere else and he'd just thread a pass without looking in between the two of them. And it may not be the pass that does anything crazy. It just really just gets a puck to a teammate in space. But that guy is now entering the slot with a ton more space to work with than he would have if Massar, you know, just kept going and chipped it to him or tried to go outside on his edge around the first wave of pressure that came that way. It's like there's a lot of small details in a game of hockey that really matter. And they often, plays that lead into dangerous chances often come from plays made that look just like every other one. It sounds almost dumb, but the key to the consistency of these plays being developed, like the dangerous ones and getting into the offensive zone, getting into the slot, getting the puck into the middle of the ice, they all come from like small abilities to just dodge pressure along the perimeter, or in transition. And Masar thrives in those situations and really knows how to like take the most out of what he's given and set his teammates up for the best. And that was clear in the OHL footage and just got better and better and better. And when situations came for him to be in dangerous situations, he executed brilliantly. Like, he doesn't force things, but he has vision. If there's a slot pass, he'll take the slot pass. If he has one guy he can beat to get into the slot himself, he'll beat him and get into the slot. Like, he's not timid or scared of making these plays. He's smart enough to know when's the time and when's not the time.
Which also, as you mentioned, then it doesn't give you the highlight reel plays that trends on Twitter or Instagram or TikTok or whatnot. So the exposure becomes less and the spread becomes even less explosive or it doesn't spread as much. So you don't see it even if you don't follow that account.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's the type of guy who, honestly, his plays are flashy. He has flashy escapes and he sidesteps guys beautifully. And you're just like, ooh, look at that. Like, look at how well and how smooth he is and how fluid his movements are. But it's in the middle of the neutral zone. And instead of, you know, escaping a guy and cutting through the middle and dangling the pants off of both defenders and splitting them and then going top shelf on the goalie, he'll just, you know, who's the most open teammate with the most direct route to the slot? I'll pass to him and then I'll just support him and pick a route off of where he goes. And it's like, that's boring, but that's pro hockey. That's what pro hockey is. That is the most junior scorers struggle in pro for a reason, because they play like junior scoring. And that's like the disconnect between what fans see and what ends up actually working and what scouts see. They see that flashy hands and the highlight reel plays, and they're not realizing some of it's coming from bad defending that shouldn't, you know, maybe they shouldn't even be in that spot to begin with. That player wouldn't get into that spot because in pro hockey, he'd have been pressured better and they'd have a defender glued to him. That's not really happening as much in the OHL. And it's kind of a good thing that Masar's not overly getting into the habit of like, oh, I can just punish this, because that trains your brain to handle these situations a bit differently. He's still consistently playing like a pro, making pro decisions. The last game I watched was a playoff one against the London Knights, who play like the most OHL Hockey Canada style hockey, but really effective. Like, they're the London Knights. We all know that they're not a joke of a team whatsoever, right? He played their game against them absolutely brilliantly. He was relentless on the forecheck in this one, just constantly putting pressure and making their defenders make quick decisions that they're not, you know, normally they have more time for. And if they messed up in any way, he was right there to just complicate their lives even further. He forced a couple of offensive zone turnovers that were really smart and really well timed. He was back checking effectively and cutting off routes, and he was sneaking in when his teammates were in board scrums and just like getting his stick in, getting the puck out and just passing it off to someone else. He had a couple of like super high, he had one actually that was just brilliant. He had like a teammate tried to pass him the puck and he kind of whiffed on the execution of the pass. So Masar put his stick like around his back and just like backhand one touched it straight to his third forward teammate, who then led a rush. And it was like, that's unbelievably smart problem solving. Like, you needed to find that one touch play and he set up that angle for it. Like, nobody saw that coming. The entire London defense was like, wait, what? Nobody was prepared. And faster teammate gets that and it's a controlled entry and maybe even a dangerous shot chance. Like, those plays really make a difference. Those are the ones you have to be able to make in the NHL. The tough, like, one touch, like, play at the pace, the fastest pace possible decision making.
Where do you see his game needing to improve? Because obviously it needs to improve, otherwise he wouldn't be in the OHL.
One part is assertiveness, just like being a little more willing to be like, no, wait, I can take this guy and, you know, dangle him out or deceive him and open up a lane. And just, he has the means to create more offense, and next year is the time where you want to see him implementing it a little bit more. I don't think it means that he's not on an NHL path, but if he continues to play this more pro style game, it will likely be that he just, not just, but he becomes a pro style middle six, third line kind of guy. Whereas if a little more assertiveness, getting those repetitions in dangerous areas in the offensive zone in the OHL is probably easier than learning to do it in the AHL, and is especially easier than doing it in the NHL. So learning it now is probably the key thing. The other part is the obvious. It's just like he, you know, needs to get stronger. With strength comes even more speed, but he's already super agile and shifty, so it's not like he needs to improve there. Shoot the puck more, because he's a surprisingly decent shot, or at least he's got decent timing with the shot. But beyond that, it's more so just refine what already works and find that extra bit of assertiveness.
Kitchener is obviously one of those OHL strong teams as well. There's no doubt about that. Even, you know, Swedes have heard about it and follow them along for a while. But can you see him being traded to a competitor for maybe a deep playoff run during
the season? He's the type of, if let's say Kitchener's not in the best spot and somebody's buying up at the deadline, Massar's the type of player that you want to add. He can absolutely, he contributes more now than people think he does. I think based on just his scoring numbers, he is like a guy who contributes in 200 feet of the ice. So you got to think that like any OHL club who is looking to add, like, what is our top six missing? We need guys who can just make plays in transition, make plays in defensive zone constantly. They're shifty. They apply pressure. They can evade pressure. They can solve problems. Basically, we need problem solvers. Then you go and you get Philip Massar.
Yeah, and the championship is worth a lot. So you're prepared to pay for it as well. So Kitchener would be able to.
It's 100% worth doing something like that.
You mentioned it. I think I know the answer already. But you see him more as a winger rather than a center, because he was drafted more as a center, right?
Yeah, I could definitely see him. I think his game honestly does the best. Like, his upside is higher at center, because he isn't. He is a type of guy who is really good at following up plays. I definitely see him stronger when he's not leading a rush, but instead he's following one and sees, just has a little bit more information to make his routes with, because he can change his direction laterally so quickly. A winger can get into the zone and he can drape one defender with him one way. Second defender is kind of guarding him and denying him an entry into the middle. And Massar can see this and see where everyone's sticks are, where their momentum is going, and kind of know the exact route he wants to take rather than just lead the rush. But he's capable of leading the rush as well, because he has the speed to just force people onto their back foot, their weight entirely behind them. And then he can also stop up on a dime. So he makes defenders uncomfortable when they're on, against him on the rush. He's back check, or they're back checking, skating backwards. Sorry, I'm tired today. They're skating backwards. Their stick is out. They're looking to force him wide, and then he can stop faster than they can stop, especially in the OHL. Like, he's getting them to stop super early, and he's then being able to cut into the slot by the time that they're even they've pivoted their weight around. He's already into the slot and his head is up. Like, these are the type of plays that are really helpful. And that's why he will likely play as a wing, because he doesn't right now have the strength to be a defensive center. And you could probably just, no matter what, like, he could be a center, but in the NHL, the standard is so high, you will likely just have someone else there who can kind of do the same thing, even if they're a slightly worse skater. They make up for it in other ways. Whereas on the wing, it's much easier for an NHL coach to see him and be like, as long as you can pressure on the forecheck and you can lead a rush, I'm fine with you.
He's size, then we have to mention that as well, because he's not the biggest guy in the world, and and how does that affect his wing career, if we want to call it that?
I mean, it doesn't. So long, there are smaller wingers in the NHL, and I mean, Montreal has seen some of these guys come.
They have seen all of them.
Yeah, like, you can make a career as a smaller winger, so long as you're. There's like a principle of physics itself. Like, when you're smaller, you have a lower center of gravity. So if you're strong in the right areas, lower body strength especially, and you have that low center of gravity and you have a strong core, like, you can get underneath guys and you have leverage. You have like, that's just how physics works. Like, you have leverage to push up. If you have the fundamentals to protect the puck and that's in those situations, and really like just the skating, which Masar already has the skating to like get guys on his back and shift off of them and find those escapes and get pucks out from the boards. I mean, that's going to be the difference maker, because an NHL coach isn't going to, you know, want to play a winger who can't contribute or ever recover pucks on the forecheck. But he doesn't need to be elite there. Like, he doesn't need to be like, oh, Masar, if he's not, you know, winning every battle, we don't want him on the forecheck. Like, his contribution a lot of the time is in open ice. He'll be great on the rush. He's great in the cycle. Like, those are the spots you want him, the spots where physical athleticism isn't as prevalent as intelligence and just understanding space and timing. So that alone is going to kind of keep him there. He's really, the other thing I guess I should have said a little sooner is like, he's just also really smart at like taking a puck and putting it into like just open space where there's no one there, knowing that he or a teammate is likely to win the battle or at least get there on a 50-50, but they have the better body positioning so they can like kind of recover it. Like, that is something that he clearly gets. He just needs to refine this a little bit more. Like, he can do it against a London Knight. He can do it against a Hamilton Bulldog. He'd probably get mauled right now if he did it against a Boston Bruin. But he can figure out, like, he plays that way properly and has the sense for where to put the puck and the timing on everyone's timing to get to it and who's going to be in what body positioning. So it all will, I think all of it will end up working out as him as a winger, just because of the rush, the ability to help on a forecheck, smart decisions with the puck. But the best version of him would come from being developed as a center. It's just unlikely to happen.
If we look at the rankings, we got Emil Heinemann at 21, Jesse Lund at 20, Ryan Kidney at 19, and Philip Mesher at 18. These are kind of a plateau between 20.3 to 19.3. And they're in the middle of everything else. Looking for the next player on the list, that player comes in as 15.6, together with another player more or less at 15.5. So those two keep together, and we're just going to take a quick break and see who that next player at number 17 is.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2, now streaming only on Disney Plus.
At 17, we have Arber Sekai, or Checkout, or Wi-Fi, or whatever we're going to call him. You know, it's a fantastic story, obviously. I love the fact that he has fought his way to the NHL. I don't love the fact that he's fighting in the NHL, though.
Yeah.
I rather see him whole and on the ice than bleeding and in a sin bin somewhere. But you also have a story with Sekai, so you make for the perfect guest here, Sam.
Yeah. The whole thing that went on but during the pandemic, the storyline that grew with him, that he was just working at a Costco playing around local hockey and things like that before just jumping into the NHL like right afterwards. Like, I'm from the same area as him. I shop at that Costco. I will be there in a couple hours. He's definitely someone that like I root for just for that aspect alone. Like, he's from the same area. We grew up in the same places. Like, we could never know each other and meet and already know things about each other just from the area. Like, that's how close we live. So I am a fan in that regard. Absolutely. Would also prefer to see him not bleeding and getting punched in the face for a living. That is not an ideal way for long-term health and longevity.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's also the fact that Montreal maybe has tried to play without a sheriff in town, and he fills that role, and it's a way of keeping you up there. But on the other hand, and now he has probably that reputation that you shouldn't fight with him because he's damn good at it as well. But
yeah,
but so it hinders a little bit. But it has been a tough couple of or this season has been tough in some games because you have seen, or I have at least when I watched, that is it really worth it to take that fight at that point? It's something for me coming from Europe as well. Fights are banned. So
yeah,
for me it becomes a culture problem, or not a problem, but a culture difference that you sort of negotiate with. But the story, the fact that he stuck with the Canadians, it's super impressive because I don't think anyone had that on their ballot last year. But fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, the story itself was amazing. I definitely didn't expect him to make the team out of the camp. It's like you said, they brought him in because they needed an enforcer. They wanted a sheriff in town, someone who, you know, you hit our guys, you mess with our guys, deal with Arbor. And he went through the who's who this year, people he could beat the snot out of, and then he beat the snot out of almost all of them. And he is absolutely a terrifying individual. And the way that the NHL works, he's got a career for, he'll be floating in and out of lineups for quite some time. This season alone will have made him quite a bit of money long term, just because he'll get 1 year deals and things like this, and he'll be on people's third pairings. When it comes to constructing a playoff caliber NHL defense, I feel like he's one of the two. You need like a seventh D who does one of two things: either steps up and like elevates your power play in a way that the other defenders don't do, even if they can't play on 5v5, or they beat the crap out of everyone so that at least there's a level of composure that remains in the playoff games. They don't go too out of hand. So Xhekaj fills like that role. He's the seventh D of I will beat the snot out of you, and that's okay. It's hard to. I personally am with you. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of the fighting, especially for a 20-year-old dude to be taking punches from guys that big and that strong. I'm not the biggest fan of it. I don't like playing people specifically for that role, considering the game is hockey, and hockey fighting are two different things, and you still need to be able to play hockey for every second you're on the ice at an NHL level. And I think you can argue Xhekaj is not currently an NHL caliber defender. If he wasn't an elite fighter, he probably wouldn't be in the show. And I don't think that's an unreasonable point to hold right now. He looks a little lost at times.
Can you see him improve on the defensive side of the game?
Yeah, there's definitely some level of improvement, especially in terms of boxing guys out and just getting, you know, blocking shots and throwing hits around and behind the net, boxing guys out, like those defensive fundamentals. Absolutely. I do have more of a modernized approach to defending. I don't want to be in a position where my defender has to box guys out or has to block that shot or has to smash that dude against the boards. That one, there are always going to be times where you need to smash a guy against the boards, but you want to just keep the puck away from dangerous areas and not have someone play sheriff when he's in them, basically. And that's the part of the game where Arbor Xhekaj right now is not like that. He can get that way, especially if he plays 4 years in the NHL. Like, you're going to learn, but right now it's not a guarantee. There's a lot of missing pieces still. His rush defending is a little questionable right now in terms of positioning. Basically, it's, can I lure you into a spot where I can check you into oblivion? If yes, then I will smash. If no, then I'm going to be beaten completely and be removed from the game entirely until, you know, I'm in the next position to smash somebody. Smashing shouldn't be the top priority of a defender ever. It should just be like, oh, I'm in a position, this works out, smash, rather than going around and actively setting up hits and moments to assert physical prowess. And every hit you set up, that you cannot fully execute to recover possession means you are then out of the play and not in the right spot to make the next one. And this was something where I was like watching Montreal and the defense was on last year. I'm like, man, why are the defenders chasing these hits? What are you guys doing? Montembeau saved so many shots that he shouldn't have had to save because of plays like this. When he has the puck on his stick, the first pass vision is there. But I don't think the first pass means as much in the NHL as it used to. Not that it's not important. You obviously need to get, you need defenders to facilitate exits out of the defensive zone. But what you also need is, that's, or I guess I'll say it is, every defender should be expected to make the obvious first pass when it's there. It's no longer a, hey, look, he has a good first pass, let's place a lot of value in it. It's like every defender on waivers can nail a first pass at this point. So like, you got to be able to offer more. He has a great cannon of a shot. I'm not the biggest fan of the point shot personally. I don't like the point shot. I find it kills a lot of possessions. And if it's, but if you're building a power play around it, you're, it's predictable. I mean, we all watched Subban and Weber take shot after shot after shot and did nothing but complain about how our power play was so stagnant and dying. And it's because a point shot mentality will always kind of lead to those stagnant, static offenses in the power play. And 5v5, it's even worse. And there's even smaller chance of it going in. And there's more of a punishing chance if it, let's say, has a wild bounce and it could, like, who knows what happens. And then it's back to Jacky defending the rush again. And it's like, okay, if can he use a stick properly and box guys out and lure them to the perimeter and keep them there? And it's like, kind of, but no. And forwards in the NHL are smart. Like, they know guys want to hit them. They're not scared of it. So they might be, you know, not a fan of getting hit by Jacky, but they also know that Jacky is trying to hit them. So they'll kind of put themselves in the spot like, hey, look, you can hit me now. You can see that he kind of goes like, oh, I can hit you now, and he like goes right after them, and they're like, nope, gotcha, and slip right by him or speed up or slow down or just do anything or just straight up pass the puck out. Some of them will just take the hit. Take the hit to make the play. It's a common thing. So
you sound a little bit like Roger Rundberg in your defensive analysis when he said, if they say we played good, we had 53% of Corsi, he asked, why don't I have 75%? You want that player that keeps the puck within the team rather than, you know.
Yeah, like, the best defense is having possession. You literally can't be scored on if you have possession. And that's not a justification to say, like, you know, you can't play defense, because it doesn't matter if you have the puck 80% of the time. If your defenders who are in charge of that literally can't stop anything, because then the other 20% is just going to be bleeding dangerous chances. You're likely to lose. But
do you see Jacky as a placeholder right now, or do you see him as a something that you can develop into a full-time defender with Montreal Canadiens? Because the defensive prospect pool is kind of amazing.
Yeah, I see him as a placeholder. I see him as a guy who's going to probably be thrown in a trade, just to like be a little bit of a value tweaker. And then he'll, you know, 1 year contract here, 1 year contract here, 1 year contract here. Maybe he just goes to Laval or a different AHL team for a while. And if he can play like stable top 4 minutes beyond just the smashy, then in the AHL, then I think he'll actually get like a legitimate third pairing career, because the ability to knock people's heads off and just play the most fundamental basic pro hockey without any flavor or seasoning or anything like that, just the basic, here's the first pass, here's the basic play to make, here I'll box this guy out. Like, if you can do that, and you'll always be able to find a job in the NHL if you're also a sheriff. So I think that's most likely the path he goes on. Developing him into more right now, when it's like you said, we have a lot of prospects defensively. And when you're looking at the field and like everyone that he's in competition with, you already know Caden Gooley has a spot. He will be a part of this top four for a long time. It's very, very likely. It's not a guarantee, but it is very likely Lane Hutson has the other spot in the top four. From there, the third pairing is extremely fluid. If you have to pay extra to keep him because he beats people up well, it's not worth it. If you can find someone else who is still physically tough and annoying to play against, but is more reliable in the defensive zone in the aspects that don't involve killing people, at full speed, then you probably just take that player and go with it. I don't know what if Xhaka ever becomes like a difference maker beyond the way he already is one as an enforcer.
There we have it. I'm sure we're going to get Sam McGilligan to come back to the pod every now and then. I know he's locked on Canadians. It's a huge fan. Those are a huge fan of you as well. So you find him on Twitter, X, or whatever we're going to call it next week, at Sam McGilligan, more or less. I'll be sure to link it in the podcast as well. Finally, some thoughts about Newhook, because you mentioned you're a fan. We're not going to go in, but you think that trade was worth it? 2 second round picks?
Just leave it at that. I was upset at first when we traded the picks, and I would have taken Gavin Brindley and Andrew Kristel, and I think the combined risks or the combined like upside of taking those two players is probably still worth having. But if you're going to trade two picks in that range for a young guy, Alex Newhook's the type of one you want to come in. People are getting a little too nuts about the low production with Colorado, considering was drafted in 2019 and is still developing and getting used to the league. He will be a great player. That is an unbelievable contract signed. Like, that could be just another top six forward for 4 years at less than $3 million, who's under 25. That's that could be one of the best deals we see Kent Hughes make.
There you have it. Thank you so much, Sam. Really, really great.
Thank you for having me.